Hello and welcome to episode 702 of the official EstablishTheRun.com podcast. My name is Adam Levitan. I am one of the co-founders here at ETR, and I have booked my first career colonoscopy. Yes, that's right. In just one short month, my asshole will be invaded. And the crazy part, well, perhaps seemingly crazy to you guys, is that I am doing this completely voluntarily. I don't really have any family history of colon cancer. I have no symptoms. I'm a bit below the recommended age to get screened. So I am paying out of pocket for this. It's not fucking cheap, but I'm paying out of pocket to do this. And I'm sure that many of you think that I am insane, hypochondriac, neurotic, etc. And you'd be absolutely right. But here's the deal. I am not afraid of dying. I am really not afraid of dying. Everyone's going to die. It's completely out of our control. I'm at peace with that. What I am absolutely stone cold petrified of, what scares me more than anything, is dying early from something that could have been prevented. So when colon cancer is the third leading cause of cancer death, but is almost completely preventable by doing colonoscopies regularly, in my opinion, it's an absolute no-brainer. You know, it's just all asymmetric upside. The risks and downside of doing it are minimal. The upside is fucking catching colon cancer before it spreads and we don't die. And the insurance companies and whoever else, they won't cover a colonoscopy before age 45. Used to be 50 years old, now 45, which to me, quite frankly, is criminal. But, you know, they won't pay for it until you're 45. But it's clear that people at age 40 are showing up with this. So listen, I know everybody's bored. I could go on and on about this health stuff all day. I've become rather obsessed with it over the last 3 to 5 years. I'm not sure exactly why. I think it's all the health stuff is like part of this full-blown MLC, full-blown midlife crisis that I'm going through. I just see so clearly what's important now, and that's time. You know, it's making sure that I'm here for my kids. I'm here for my wife. I'm here for everyone at ETR who relies on me. So yes, I am 1000% convinced that this upcoming asshole invasion is the right move. And I figure we'll get some content out of it too. You know, the vasectomy trip report is one of our most downloaded podcasts ever. We'll see what we can come up with this time. All right. Want to get to a few more things here. First, I'm sure you're wondering why we're doing a solo pod here in March. Don't normally do them in the off season. I know free agency is going on. Draft is coming up. Just a couple of reasons. First, on free agency, if we did a pod today, it would be out of date before we can even get it up, before you can listen. So when things settle down a little bit, Evan and I will do a pod series about everything that happened in free agency. Will be a lot. Stay tuned for that. And second, I just love doing these solo pods. You know, a ton of people have asked for some solo pods in the off season. Had a few things to get off my chest here today, so made some sense. Okay, so I'm sure some of you saw that Gary Hartman, who worked on both our NFL and NBA teams, is leaving ETR and the fantasy quote-unquote industry. Would really encourage everyone to read Gary's note on Substack about his journey. Think it will hit home for a lot of us. The cliffs are basically, Gary has a kid now, he lives in Manhattan, he needed slash wanted to get a real job, which did hit home for me because I was incredibly close to not being here, you know, hanging out with you all right now. Back in, God, I don't know, must have been 2010 or 2011. I was working at Roto World part-time, making roughly $0, playing live poker a ton to just make it work. I looked in the mirror one day and I was like, fuck, man, I got to do something here. So I decided to take the GMATs with the intention of going to business school and eventually gamble on stocks. Signed up for a GMAT Kaplan class, studied my ass off, took it, did well, was working on applications. And then a few things happened where I got a full-time offer from Roto World and could also just feel the DFS stuff starting to happen. So I never actually applied to any business schools. And look, I know no one cares about this. My point is just that we've all been in Gary's shoes, I think, because so much of life comes down to trade-offs. And everyone wants to work in sports. Well, not everyone, but I'm sure there's hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of people in the United States or all over the world right now that want to work in sports. And I don't blame them. It's pretty fucking great. You know, so many people would be loved doing what Gary did and couldn't imagine leaving. But that's really the issue. You know, I knew when I was at Roto-World, I knew that if I quit, there would be a line of thousands of dudes waiting to take my spot who could, quite frankly, probably have done it just as well as me. And so I would go in there every year at Roto-World, talk to the bosses, ask for a raise. They'd say, yeah, sure, you know, here's 3% raise. When you're making 50K, a 3% raise isn't going to do too much. But I actually wasn't pissed. I wasn't resentful or anything. I was just happy to be getting paid at all to work in sports. And so that was just a trade-off. And you know, the trade-off can also be, hey, we get to work in sports, but it's fucking hard slash borderline impossible to live in Manhattan and have a family and work in sports or in any other super expensive city. I mean, I suspect almost everyone on our team at ETR could make more money in some other business outside of sports. They're just all so fucking smart. And in so many cases did leave really high paying jobs in the quote unquote real world to come to ETR. And that's because I think when practical, I think a lot of people get to a point where they realize we are on Earth a short amount of time. We spend a ton of that time at work. Enjoying what you do for work is a privilege for sure, but it's a privilege and a goal that I think is worth striving for, even at the expense of maximizing income. So I know I'm rambling here. I just want to say thanks to Gary for all his work. Really appreciate all his contributions. Totally understand, and best of luck going forward. One other thing I wanted to get off my chest is this whole trend of everyone saying everything is rigged. I mean, it's fucking wild. It feels like an epidemic. People lose at something, you know. I'll give examples of betting or even actual athletes, professional athletes losing games. And the response of the bettor or the player isn't, hey, I need to play better, or I need to make better projections. I need to improve my model. It's not, hey, I'm going to take my loss like a man. It's, that game was rigged. I got cheated. I didn't lose, and whine about it. Now, I want to be clear. Of course there's some chance that refs are compromised. Of course there's some chance players are compromised. I am very familiar with the Tim Donaghy stuff. I'm fascinated by it. I've read all the books about it. But we've reached the point now where people are just being completely off the rails with this stuff. Every time they lose, it couldn't possibly be my fault. It had to be fixed against me. And to me, that is just so pathetic, so weak, and it just keeps people from ever reaching their potential, the whole victim mentality, even if there's merit to it. It's just a net negative mindset for people, I think. Now, in terms of the Rudy Gobert stuff and the NBA stuff that I tweeted about, everybody's response to me that they were all pissed off, you know, oh, you're on the side of the leagues. What are you trying to cover up? You know, people are like, Scott Foster, he had 134 calls to Donaghy. You know, of course he's rigging the games. I mean, I'm well aware, but think about it. No ref on the planet is under more scrutiny than Scott Foster ever since the Tim Donaghy thing. You really think that Scott Foster is fixing games now? I mean, that's the NBA's worst nightmare. They have to be all over Scott Foster. The only way the NBA's money train stops is if people don't trust that the games are on the up and up, that the games are true. And it's the same with DraftKings, same with the NFL. All the incentive for all of these entities is on the side of integrity. You know, even if DraftKings could rig a game with the NBA or with tennis or whatever, and they win $50 million, which is literally impossible. But even if you could rig a game and win $50 million, it still wouldn't be worth the risk for them. They are worth billions and billions of dollars. So when people say dumb shit like the NBA is in cahoots with the NFL about fixing games or props so that bettors lose, I mean, these people are just telling on themselves as stone cold brainless, in my opinion, of course. The other thing, and I hate to keep ranting about this, but the other thing that tilts me is when people like Rudy Gobert say things along the lines of, sports betting is legal and very popular now. So yeah, games are rigged. Buddy, legalization and regulation of sports betting makes it less likely than before that there are fixed games. Everything is monitored when it's legalized and regulated. These weird line moves on screen, and I emphasize on screen, not with bookies and tiny offshores, etc. But that stuff also ends up moving at legals regardless. And so it's so easy to catch. I mean, you can Google this Temple basketball thing. They got snap caught. So look, anytime we're gambling, our head needs to be on a swivel. Getting cheated in poker games, people using RTA or colluding against us in poker, you know, unintentional stuff like Ethan Gate and DFS, refs like Donaghy getting compromised, players fixing games. I totally get it. It's out there. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but I just don't think it happens as much as everyone wants to believe, i.e. every time they lose. And using this excuse crutch, I mean, maybe I'm a hardo, but I just don't think that's good for anyone. All right, one last thing I wanted to mention on the ETR side was our MMA launch. A lot of people reached out and asked me, why MMA? Obviously, we are very picky and selective about what sports we cover. The most important thing is to ensure that we have an edge, that we can actually help people with either data or takes or help them save time or projections and hopefully all of the above. And I think when we were presented with the opportunity to work with Brett Apley on MMA, it was a no-brainer. You know, similar to the March Madness product that we're launching for the tournament, Alex Harden and Sean Newsham, just the best, right? So yeah, one thing about other sports people ask about, you know, they ask about baseball a lot and hockey a lot. First of all, beating more mainstream markets is harder. You know, tons of very smart people with tons of very good data are already in those markets. I think for us to launch something there, it would be very expensive and time consuming to get it where we wanted it to be. And so in order to stay ahead in NFL, NBA, golf, we just need to keep doubling down on that stuff in terms of money and people, because no matter what the idiots on Twitter try to tell you, winning is very, very hard and always getting harder, you know? So it's a balancing act. You know, we want to cover more sports because A, we want to help people more, and B, we want to make money, of course, because we're running a fucking business. But the only way we can cover more sports is if it doesn't distract us from NFL, which we are continuing to double and triple down on. And also if we can actually generate an edge for subscribers, not this performance art nonsense that you see out there from so many people. So hope that helps answer some of the questions on baseball, hockey, stuff like that. All right. Need to get to listener questions, but before I do, another reminder that if you head to the site right now, you will find information on the products I just mentioned, the new MMA product, plus the March Madness DFS product. Obviously, golf and NBA are in full swing right now as well. So if you're interested in any of that, head to establishtherun.com. All right, enough is enough. It is time for everyone's favorite portion of the program, listener questions. Bruce and Luke, hit the theme music. All right, these questions were left over from the end of last NFL season. This is it for that. So next time I do a solo pod, I'll be asking for questions. Stay tuned to Twitter for that, at Adam Levitan, all one word. Going to do four here today. Question one from Fire Mike Tomlin. He said, ran my lifetime numbers on FanDuel. I have a 12% ROI. Is that any good? Would it be wise or unwise to try to expand that to a larger scale? I mostly play long shot parlays on stuff I'm knowledgeable in, mostly NFL. Thanks, love the show. So, Fire Mike Tomlin, I would need some more context here. Sounds like you're talking about betting, not DFS. In that case, I mean, anyone winning anything at all is crushing, in my opinion. So yeah, you know, 12% is a smash. However, based on your note, I'd be real careful about trying to scale that. Long shot parlays, you know, that scares me. Really hard to be a long-term winner on parlays at all, unless you're a truly winning world-class sports bettor. And hitting a couple of those could really skew your ROI. Not all that similar from DFS GPPs. I mean, let's say you've been playing large field tournaments in DFS for 3 years, every day, you're down 900K. Then one day you hit first place in a lotto for $1 million. Now you're up 100K. Does that mean you're a really good DFS tournament player and you should start playing bigger? I'd have to look at more detail of your results in the Solver bankroll tracker, of course, shout out to us. But I'm guessing that you shouldn't start playing bigger. You know, I'd look at your finish position rates, how often you're getting lineups into the top 1%. For betting, I'd be looking at how often you're getting CLV and end of game variance, how that's gone in your way or not. But yeah, look, the bottom line with the betting stuff and parlays and everything, I know everyone loves it. I agree, it's fun. Very, very, very few people should be doing it as more than a hobby. So if I was your financial advisor, I would vote no on playing bigger, most likely. Fire Mike Tomlin. Sorry for the bad news. Question two from Corey. He says, What is the acceptable time/distance for holding a door open for someone? Does gender matter? If person who had the door held for them doesn't say thank you, do you give the passive aggressive, you're welcome? Yeah, door holding. I know a lot of people have done bits on this. I always go above and beyond with the door holding. I mean, I'm such a terrible human. When I can do little things that are easy, like say thank you, or ask someone in the service industry how their day is going, or give a couple bucks on top of a tip, you know, on top of the 20% or whatever. To me, that's no-brainer stuff. Because the big stuff, actually taking significant time, energy to actually go out of my way for other people, I mean, I'm terrible at that. Terrible at that, you know? Blaming it on being an only child. And yeah. Oh, your last point. I'm not going to be a bean counter on thank yous, man. You know, they don't say thank you. That's cool. When I hold the door, they don't say thank you. That's cool. It's all good. You know, you never know what kind of day someone else is having. They may not have the privilege of telling dick jokes on the internet every day, you know, so never know. Question three from Bayesian Test System. He says, who drives the kids to school and what time do you have to get up to do it? If you have to do it instead of the wife, does that affect how late you stay up grinding on your company, watching sports, DFS, etc.? So when the kids were in daycare, they started there around 8 months old. I took them to daycare every day. It was pure, absolute hell. Actual full-blown hell. You know, they wake up, they've got shit everywhere, they're screaming, they need to eat, they need to get dressed. They need to get in the car. You got to get to daycare. You're crying when you drop them off. You got to pack their bag. I mean, I was on absolute full-blown tilt. And the timing on that was bad. I mean, daycare opened at 7 a.m. I was there at 6:55 a.m. every single day. But going to bed early on that, you know, the kids were getting up so much in the middle of the night anyways and stuff. But, you know, going to bed early, they go to bed pretty early. So that wasn't really an issue. Now, though, kids are 9 and 6. Both ride the bus, you know, to the local public school with all their friends from the neighborhood. They can just walk down to the bus stop, you know, some real peak suburban shit. I'm honestly usually still in bed when they leave the house, you know, probably not setting the best example there, but yeah, they're just the best now. They're so self-sufficient and fun to be around. You just got to get through those first 3 or 4 years of utter hell. And in terms of staying up late for sports, just can't recommend getting off the East Coast enough for so many reasons. But since I moved to Mountain Time, it's just infinitely better for sports. NBA starts at 5 p.m. NFL starts at 11 a.m. on Sundays. It's just so much better. Highly recommend it. Question four, last question we're going to do today, comes from Dragon. He says, my Dynasty League has decided to start over because I have a juggernaut, partially from taking advantage of people who are clueless. My thoughts are, I'm not here to make friends. I'm here to make money. I'm not making a stink about this because be better, act like a champion, but this is BS, right? So I realized a while ago, after some mistakes in the area, that you have to separate these two things when it comes to fantasy. You can play fantasy with your friends. It's for fun. It's social. You talk shit. But it's not for the money. You know, we play hard. We grind. But it's for bragging rights, not money. And then when you want to play for money, you play against strangers or maybe acquaintances. And that didn't always used to be a thing. You know, when I was a kid, the only action against strangers was the USA Today phone-in salary game. But obviously now there's unlimited action against strangers in Dynasty, Best Ball, Redraft, DFS, whatever. I mean, you can play for pretty high stakes in all those disciplines. So yeah, obviously starting a Dynasty League over because someone is too good is some truly weak, truly pathetic shit. I'd probably do the colonoscopy with no anesthesia before I admitted someone was so good that we have to start over. But also maybe you do want to start over and have a different attitude about it, where it's not about the money. You're hanging out with your friends and you're not trying to rip them off in trades, etc. All right, that is going to do it for this rare off-season solo pod. Appreciate you all tuning in. We'll be back with Silva soon to talk all free agency fallout. Oh, last thing. If anyone listening is in North Carolina, I know North Carolina sports betting just launched. You would have to really hate money to not take advantage of the sign-up bonuses that all these sites are offering. If you head to the props tab on ETR, all the sign-up bonuses by state are lifted are listed there. For Bruce Luke, for Jerry, the most beautiful beast in the world, I am Adam. Good luck, everybody.